Welcome to the In the Blues Tone podcast. My name's Shane. It's August the 17th. It's a Saturday night here. It's 8:32 p.m. as of the start of this particular recording. And I'm sitting at home on a Saturday night like a loser. Anyway, that's how we do it over here. Usually I get out and play Sundays and, Saturday nights, it's actually kind of quiet around here, so it's a good time to do the podcast. So welcome back, everybody. We've got about 2,000 new subs on since the last podcast. And thank you to everyone who commented on that one, who left a thumbs up, all that kind of stuff. You know, the podcast was something I let go quite some time ago, and it's great to be doing it again. So thank you for all the support. If you enjoy this one, leave a thumbs up, leave a comment below. If we can get this to like 1,000 thumbs up, that would be amazing. It's funny, videos will get 50,000 views, but it's very rare to see a video click over 1,000 thumbs up. So if you could help me out there, that would be awesome. This is completely free. So I hope you enjoy this episode of the In the Blues Tone podcast. On the last episode of the podcast, we were talking about solid state amps and how they used to be really great back in the day, and then the quality control kind of died off, and now we're left with where we are today. There's only a handful of solid state amp manufacturers today making quality stuff, and most of them are expensive. Not all of them, but most of them are expensive. But if you can get a PV Red Stripe Bandit on the used market, it's a great amp. And guess what? I have another one down here, which is insane. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later on. But it got me thinking, like, what could PV do again to sort of come back into the mainstream? It feels like they've kind of fallen off the ends of the earth. We'll talk a little bit about how this happened, why it happened, and how they might actually be able to come back. Now, I'm no business expert. Sure, I got a small business doing what I do online, but you know, I'm not a global manufacturer. This is just my opinions on it. And I want to talk a little bit about why I actually really love certain PV amplifiers. And maybe if they started recreating the classics again, maybe more people would be interested. If you're unfamiliar with how PV sort of operated and their little bit of their history, I'll just give you some information. So up until about the early 2000s, everything PV made, or a lot of their main amplifiers, were made in the US. Now, the Red Stripe Bandits were partly made in China and partly made in the US. So mine's made in China and it's still going strong 20 odd years after it's been made, which is awesome. But they ended up moving their manufacturing from Mississippi in the United States over to China exclusively, at least to my knowledge. If I've got any of that wrong, just let me know. But a lot of people were pretty disheartened by the fact that all the layoffs happened and they moved their manufacturing overseas, and they were still charging the same price for their amps that they were when they were made in the US. You know, a lot of people take pride in where something's made from, and I fully understand that. If you can get a made in the US Delta Blues off the used market, it's still one of the best amps. If you can get a PV Classic 50 over here that's made in the US with four 10-inch speakers, it's arguably the best amp I've ever owned. The PV amps, whether they're made in the US or even the early Chinese ones like this one, these are fantastic amps. They've stood the test of time. The tone's great. They're great value. And PV were great value when it came to their amplifiers, even new, being made in the US. I remember I bought two different PV Delta Blues. They're the ones with the 15-inch speakers, and they were under $1,000 here in Australia when I bought them. They probably would have cost more now had they have still been manufactured in the US. I almost think that most people would be happy paying a little bit extra to have them made in the US. Now, if they're two or three times the price, that's a different discussion. But the fact that PV, however they did it, they were able to manufacture good quality tube and solid state amplifiers. And then when they moved over to China, the price actually went up. Now, you could blame inflation, and that's a big part of it. Obviously, many areas of the world, inflation just keeps creeping up and things cost more to make. But the value at the time for, say, a PV Delta Blues or even a Classic 30 or whatever was much better than a lot of the competition. And PV were always like the affordable, robust, built for the road kind of amplifiers. And it's a real shame to sort of see that they've kind of fallen off the map. I wouldn't say I'm a huge PV fanboy, but I'm pretty close to that when it comes to certain amps. Again, the Classic 50 back here, arguably the best clean sound I've ever had. It's right up there with the Super Reverb and my 2-Rock amplifier. The sounds I can get out of this are on a whole different level compared to any of my other combos you see behind me. And when it comes to solid state amplifiers, if you missed the last episode, the Red Stripe PV Bandit is still one of the best amps you can buy on the used market. And this particular one was in mint condition. With my fascination for solid state amplifiers and old made in the USA PV tube amps aside, I know a lot of people had a bit of a sort of bad taste in their mouth when it came to PV, and fair enough, right? But unfortunately, this is the way a lot of guitar companies are going. You know, they might have started in the US, they might make stuff overseas in Mexico. They might make stuff in China. Then all of a sudden, more stuff keeps getting outsourced. Why? Because they make more money. But I'm going to talk a little bit about what I would love to see if PV ever decided to make some stuff in the US again. Starting with, of course, a reissue. Now, one of the cool things about PV is, if you aren't familiar with them, they've never reissued an amplifier, which is crazy. You know how you've always got the Fender 65 Deluxe Reverb, the 68 Deluxe Reverb, and so forth. PV just don't do that. They've always had new versions of existing amplifiers, and I think this is pretty great. I remember the Tone King interviewed Hartley PV at some sort of guitar convention somewhere. I'm not exactly sure where it was, and he said, yeah, we don't reissue anything. We just try to push the tech forward. But I think it might be time, if they ever chose to do it, to bring back some manufacturing to the US and make or reissue some of the classic amplifiers, starting with, of course, great amps like the PV Classic 50. Now, I know that 50 might be overkill for some folks, but look at the price of something like a Fender Super Reverb amplifier. I got this for almost a third. It was used, obviously, but it was a third less money on the used market, and it absolutely wipes the floor with nearly every amp I've owned over the years. So maybe they could bring back, you know, a black Tolex version and call it a whatever year it came out edition, you know, something like that. And if they have to charge, say, a little bit more of a premium for it being made in the US, I think it would still come in cheaper than a lot of other alternatives in the same space. So that's the big amp discussion. Now, when it comes to their smaller amplifiers, a PV Classic 30 or a Delta Blues, those amps, you know, the Delta Blues Mississippi, the connection there is very obvious. So it would be great to have some of those amps made again back in the US. Now, you might be saying, hey, why not just pick up one of the Chinese-made ones? I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm not saying they're bad amplifiers, but I know a lot of the fans of the amplifier brand kind of got a little bit sort of jaded by the fact that all the manufacturing went overseas. I think everyone got fired, and you can check out that Undercover Boss, and I'll link that down below. I should rewatch it again at some point. It's been a few years. But yeah, if they start with the classics like that, that would be great. I really think they might be onto something, and it'd be interesting to see where they'd sort of fall in price-wise up against the competition. This also brings me to the point, you know, if it's too expensive to make these in the US, Fender manufacture plenty of their amplifiers in Mexico, and people don't seem to have too much of a problem with that. But again, if you take a look at the USA-made Fender stuff, it's so expensive. Like, it's way more expensive. Now, there's a few amps that kind of fall in that middle ground. The hand-wired stuff obviously costs a fortune, but then there's like the Supersonics, you've got the Deluxe Reverb, and a few other amps which are still made in the US. And I really like that. It's good to have that flexibility there. When you step back to something like the Fender Blues Jr. or a Hot Rod Deluxe, they're made in Mexico, and those amps are great. So maybe there's a middle ground there. Maybe some of the range could be made in different sections. But I almost don't know if it matters where they get made anymore and whether or not that reputation damage can kind of be recovered. But I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. And I have no stake in the game here. I'm just a big fan of their amplifiers from back in the day, and I haven't owned too many recent ones. It's been over about 12, 13 years since I purchased a PV amp from new, because the last one I bought was a Delta Blues. And yeah, great amps. If you can still find them, they're definitely worth checking out. The next amplifier I would love to see reissued, if they ever had a chance to do it, would be bring back the Red Stripe PV Bandit. You don't have to go too far online to see how many people rave about this amp. I think I might have been the first one posting videos almost globally about this amp back in the day, and you can find those videos on my channel. Just search for PV or Red Stripe and you'll find those videos from like 14 years ago. So yeah, I've been buying and selling those for years, and this particular one right here, I'm going to be keeping this one because I'm a huge fan. But these amps are so good, I would love to see PV reissue these. There's nothing that really needed to be changed on them. Unfortunately, you know, as things or tech moved on, their sound changed enough where when I was doing the A-B comparisons between a Red Stripe and some of the more modern Bandits, the Red Stripe wiped the floor with it in a few different scenarios. Now, everyone likes different tones and different setups. This has a real spring reverb that sounds unbelievable. And the modern Bandits don't give you a spring reverb. They give you, well, a digital recreation of it. And I don't usually have too much of a problem with a digital spring reverb. Longevity with that will probably be fine, but I think it sort of impacted the feel of some of the more modern amps. And while they're blisteringly loud, they added a power attenuation switch to them. The Red Stripe Bandit, if you haven't played one, you've got to try them. I think they're one of the best solid state amps you can buy, especially for the price. I mean, this amp was up for sale for $275 Australian dollars, which is, if I had to guess, like 180 US dollars, which I think is a really great deal, especially for what our dollar's worth here in Australia. For $275, you can't even buy a piece of junk amp. There's just no way around it. And being able to find one of these in mint condition is great. But if they ever released them, knowing the hype that are behind these amplifiers, I think they would still be popular in 2024 and and beyond, obviously. These amps really cut a mix. So if you're a live player, you can crank them up and get plenty of volume. They handle pedals beautifully, and they handle pedals a lot better than digital modeling amplifiers do. And again, if you haven't tried them in the context of a mix, you don't really know what you're missing, or you might have a basis for comparison. But while there's plenty of great solid state amps out there, a lot of them just don't give me the same sort of vibe as some of these older PV amps. But maybe that's just me. Let us know in the comment section. Just to let you know, if you're wondering, I have no affiliation with PV. I've never spoken to anyone from the company, nor have they given me anything for free. All the amps I've showcased on this channel were ones that I purchased or I borrowed off friends. So let us know in the comment section whether or not you think PV can actually make a comeback when it comes to guitar products. You know, they make so many great guitars back in the day as well. It's a real shame to sort of see them, you know, lose their cred or lose their customer base or whatever, but I guess it is what it is. That's how the world works. Up next, we're going to talk about the transition from playing at home to going out and playing at a blues jam, and a blues jam in particular, because I play blues. I go to the blues jams. I've been going to them since about 2000, so it's been a long time since I've been going out and playing live, and it was the best thing for my learning I could have made. Now, practice is highly underappreciated as well. I wish I practiced more. I spend a lot of time filming. I don't spend a lot of time working on my chops, but I tell you what works for me: recording, which shows you all of your flaws, and going out and playing live. Both of these two things show where you need to improve, and it's an endless journey for many of us, including myself. So I think playing live takes everything you thought you knew and puts it into context, and also shows you what you need to practice. So I'm going to talk a little bit about, if you're going to a blues jam for the first time, what to think about, what to do when it comes to your gear, but also what you need to think about musically to make the night fun. Someone once said to me, you're only as strong as the weakest link in the band. And that's absolutely true, because if the drummer sucks, the band sucks. If the bass player sucks, it's a nightmare. If the guitar player is too loud, out of time, and playing too much, it sucks. So you want to try to contribute the best way that you can at any skill level. And these are the things I'm going to be talking about throughout this video. Now, before we get into this, if you're playing live already in any capacity, also let me know in the comment section. It's great to know how many people are out there who are aspiring to go out and play live in any capacity, or if you're already doing it. So nothing wrong with being a home player either. I play at home more than I play out, but it is one of those things that when I get the opportunity to go out and play and it's good, it's unbeatable. So always remember that music's supposed to be shared in any capacity, whether you're recording it or whether you're sharing it with friends or whether you're actually interacting with other musicians. And it will push you, because some of the guys I've played with over the years are still some of the best guitar players I've met and musicians. So yeah, it's been a fun journey for me, and it's put me into situations where I was out of my element. And then as time goes on and as you learn more, you become more consistent and you just live for it. We call them the jam desperados over here. There's a whole bunch of us that won't miss the jams, and I'm still enjoying it all of these years later. And I've met so many cool people going to the jams as well. Anyway, let's talk about what to think about. So before you go, test out your gear. If you've got an amp that you know is going to be loud enough for the gig and you like to use your pedals, try and get a rough idea of how everything interacts before you even go. Set up everything. Turn the volume of the amp up, take a few steps back, and start playing with your pedals and get a good sense of how everything is interacting. A lot of the things I see when I'm at blues jams, for example, with less experienced people and people who should know better after 20 years, is their rhythm guitar sound is so much louder than their lead guitar sound. They go from this big, clean rhythm sound at full blast on the guitar volume control to a fizzy, compressed, nasally, and uninspiring lead guitar tone when they click on all these pedals. You don't need much to get a good sound, but your lead sound should always be above your rhythm guitar sound. And how do you work this out? You take a few steps back at home and work out where the volume actually sits. And don't forget, you got a volume control on your guitar. If anyone's singing, or if you're not doing your solo, have your guitar volume at half. That's a good starting place. And if it's too quiet or too loud, adjust it from there. if it's not your moment to shine with a guitar solo or whatever, you've got to be complimenting the band, and just playing really loud, busy chords is a no-go zone. So if you're unfamiliar with going to jams and it's your first time going out, everyone starts somewhere, right? But I always encourage anybody now to look at what the other guitarist is doing and find something else. And if you can't find something else, just play a slight variation of what they're doing, but keep the volume down. I see it so many times where someone will set up a feel and then the other guy will play exactly the same thing. You've got to try to come up with other types of complementary parts. And this is something that will get you out of knowing just what you know now into playing complementary parts. And this is what makes the jam really inspiring. So usually if I'm playing with my friend Brian and he might be setting up the feel, I'm trying to find something that doesn't get in his way vocally, but also complements his guitar part. And this is part of the fun. If I was just playing the same thing, he'd be like, what are you doing, man? Like, why are you doing that? Now, I'm going to say this. You can play the other person's part if they're doing the guitar solo. So if it's a standard Chicago blues, like you've heard a million times, you can play that part when they're not playing that part, but be very sort of like aware of what's going on around you. The awareness is another thing you see a lot of people lacking when it comes to playing with other people in any capacity, even bands. And I put that in quotation. There's bands with just a bunch of inexperienced dudes and they're having a great time, so good on them. But you can tell there's no onstage communication. You should be always looking around, making sure you're taking the right cues and all that from the singer or whoever's leading the set, right? So you've got to be aware of things on stage. And all of this is stuff you'll learn over time, but it's always good just to sit back for a sec and think, okay, what's this guy playing or what's that person playing? And now what do I do to complement it? And it could be just as simple as picking a chord. You know, if someone's doing a bumper bumper or a shuffle kind of feel, you can just play parts of a chord, a seventh chord or a minor, whatever the feel of the song is, and make it work. You don't have to play exactly the same part. So that would be my first suggestion. And always make sure if you're going to put in fills that it's not getting in the way of the vocals. You know, there's nothing worse than trying to sing and someone's just noodling around. The noodlers. it's a tough world to live in if you're singing and someone's just noodling all over it. You might have heard the saying, you've got to pay your dues to play the blues. And this is the precise statement of any blues jam. So when you first go to a blues jam, odds are there's already a bunch of people there that know each other and have played together 500 times like at every other blues jam. That's just the way it works, right? You go to one blues jam in Melbourne here where I live and then go to three others and you'll see a lot of the same people. That's just how it works. You sort of got to get out further before you start finding different crowds. So you'll be the new guy there and odds are you'll probably get a bad set. Now, if you're a pretty seasoned player and you go to the blues jam, the same thing will happen. They don't know who you are. So they'll put you up with a bit of a beginner set. And if you're great or good, the second time you go there, they'll put you up with someone else or they'll mix it up and give you a better set. These are all things that just happen at blues jams. And you might think it's kind of like an elitism thing, but if you've got great players there and they're getting sort of shafted every week, they'll stop coming back. So the jams are run in a way where they kind of encourage great players to keep showing up. And I've played in San Francisco, I've played in Florida, Georgia, I've played in Melbourne, Australia, and plenty of other places over the years. And they all run the same. There's the same group of people that know each other. And then if you're the new guy, you'll get a set that might not be ideal. And then if you can play or you improve, they'll start getting you up more. And then you'll get much better and better sets. And this happened to me when I was in Florida, actually. I played in Flagler Avenue in New Smyrna Beach the first time. And I got up with this set. It was a bit of a mess. But all of a sudden, they heard me play. And they said, oh, man, you're a decent guitar player. This is cool. I said, oh, thanks. Next set, I got up for the best set of the night with the guys. This was the following week, and I had a blast, man. And I hope I can find that footage somewhere. I don't know if I'll be able to put it over this video, but it was hilarious, man. I got to play in so many different situations. Played in Chicago with a guy called Sammy Fender back in the day, and I did a full video about that. If you want to hear that story, I'll link it up in the cards. But essentially, I flew all the way from Australia to the US. I got to play in Chicago. The jams are fun, no matter where you go. But I had one of the best times I've ever had. And that's because these blues jams can be totally inspirational, motivating, and wherever. It doesn't matter where you are in the world either. I have the same sort of experience here in Melbourne, Australia with some of the sort of top tier musicians. But you also have an eclectic group of people in a room. Musicians all have their intricacies. I know I have mine and my friends have theirs and all that kind of stuff. But when it's a collaborative thing, it can really work and it can leave you with some of the best memories you'll have. What I'm going to say, though, if you are going to go to the Blues Jam, try and record it in any capacity, whether that's the audio. I used to record all my old open mic nights and blues jams on a little mini disc recorder back in the day, just audio. And then if you can, put up a camera. This will allow you not only to play back over those songs again at home, but it also teaches you, maybe I could have done this better, was my solo in time, and all of that kind of stuff. And this is the benefit of recording. If you're not recording yourself in any capacity, you have no understanding of your timing, tone, feel, all that kind of stuff. You might think that you do, but hearing it in context with music outside of a metronome or outside of a produced backing track is a completely different scenario. So record it. It will help your development to no end. One of the things I've always loved about the Blues Jams is the fact I get to test my gear out of the house. Now, if you've got a great sounding valve amplifier sitting at home doing nothing, what's the point? It's great being able to crank them up and use them live and to see what kind of inspiration it gives you. All I'm going to say is if you've got an amp up at gig volume or at a jam volume, it's an infinitely different experience than it is playing quietly at home. And while that's fine for your ears and practice and all that kind of stuff, cranking an amp up is inspiring. And depending on the guitar you have, you might get an interaction with the instrument you've never actually heard before. Like a 335 will blow wind out on your arm if your amp's up loud enough and you're in close proximity to the amplifier. It's amazing. It's one of those things that shocked me the first time it happened because I'd never actually had a 335 up at gig volume before. And I was like, man, this is awesome. And this is something you won't experience if you're just playing at home, unless you have the opportunity to crank it up, of course. But yeah, get out there, start playing live. It will help your development. If you've never done it before, I hope this encourages you to go out and do it, because start now. Just push yourself. Learn a couple of basic Chicago feels. Learn some complementary chords. Just learn those parts and you'll have something to contribute. And if you're not in a place where you're ready to solo, just let whoever's running the set know. Just say, hey, I just want to play rhythm guitar. And you know what? That'll be fine too. It's all about getting out there. You might meet some cool folks. And I've had the same friends now that I met at the Blues Jams here for over 20 years, which is crazy. So yeah, we're all still doing it all these years later. Anyway, I hope this encourages you to get out and enjoy it, because I think it's fun. And if you do make the transition from playing at home to getting out and playing live, I hope to hear about it on the next podcast. And that wraps up another In the Blues Tone podcast. Thank you so much for watching and listening. This will also be available on iTunes, Spotify, inthebluespodcast.com, and of course on YouTube. I'll link it all down below anyway. You can follow all the stuff. Anyway, thanks again. Catch you soon. See ya.